Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. We are back to talk about another defeat. Has a blueprint to beat Sunderland been set? Because Rotherham and Coventry have bullied and scrapped their way to wins this week, with Sunderland being the victims. Joining myself, Stephen Goldsmith, to discuss that, amongst other stuff, is Gareth Barker. Evening.
Good evening.
How are we feeling?
All right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess so, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just classic Monday, isn't it?
Just having
to do work and then finishing work and talking about us losing. So it's like the old times.
To work with any Newcastle fans, has that conversation been had?
I was working from home today, unfortunately. I do work with a couple. They're not they don't go on. Like about that much, so do you know what I mean? Like generally, they're not like gobby ones, so you know it would be feels like unfair to have a dig at them. But I will be doing that when I'm in the office.
Yeah. Biding your time, yeah. Spread these things out anyway. You don't want to.
Don't peak too soon.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just get rid of it all in one go. We've also got Phil Buckingham from The Athletic joining us again this evening.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Yourself?
Slightly despondent about the weekend, but the beauty of the Saturday lunchtime kickoff is that you can get out your system and enjoy the rest of your weekend after that.
Yeah, I guess so. It's annoying though, isn't it? Hmm. It was quite a bad place when we lost that, and then I saw the halftime Premier League scores come in, and every single Premier League game was 0-0 at halftime. So I thought, oh, I'm not even going to be able to enjoy match of the day tonight.
You have your hangover in the middle of the night if you're drinking early. Generally, that's what, you don't wake up with a hangover. You kind of sweat it out through the evening. That's what I find. So that's a positive.
we've got to find a positive, haven't we?
I tell you what, a positive stroke negative was Richard's breakfast on Saturday morning, which was like quite incredible. And if you've not seen the picture of that, then I'm sure Richard retweeted it and I tweeted it. But it's one of the most phenomenal things I've ever seen in my life.
Do you feel like you need a little bread for those?
What I feel like is, do you know that thing? Because it's like a local business. So it's like, well, is it local? It's a kind of franchise business.
Local franchise, though, I think.
So is it bad? Is it bad to dig them out over it by name?
No, I don't think we should do that.
I absolutely would not recommend going there. based on our experience.
For food, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Richard ordered put two poached eggs on a thickly sliced buttered farmhouse bread for £6, and what arrived was two slices of like shop bought slice wide bread with no butter on the side, and two very sad sort of poached eggs that looked like somebody had the like goat eyeballs or something like that sitting atop them, and that's at least they were runny in the middle, so that was, but it was just hilarious. But yeah, maybe
it was the moment of silence from the table when I got put down in front of them, wasn't it? We were all like who's going to say something about that? Yeah. Right. And it was cool. It was kind of all getting together. We went out watching a match together, wasn't it? And we don't do that
as
a Wise Men Say team, we did that. And I quite enjoyed it, apart from the result. And I mean, we get straight into it. I've said there, is the blueprint being set in a way, because it's interesting because I just didn't think we turned up that really at Rotherham, but it was still the same tactic shown by the opposition. And we said, Gareth, didn't we, when we were watching about 10 minutes in the game, we said we've played better here already than we did midweek against Rotherham. Yeah. And aesthetically, it was good, but bullied out of it again, I think, by a physical team.
I mean, there's a few different parts of that, isn't it? The physicality thing. I mean, one of it is, and you certainly look, the first goal was a foul and a handball. And just because, you know, you can say sometimes you do have to be stronger, but that doesn't mean like you're immune to being fouled. But I think it's just, you know, we are, I think we've shown time and time again this year that we are a bit soft at times, and we just let teams do that to us. We're never like run around whinging like every other team. We kind of, if one of our lads gets, you know, clattered or something, we kind of just seem to stand there with our hands on our hips. You know, nobody like generally gets into the referee or any, not that I'm like, you know, some people might go, oh, you shouldn't be doing that anyway, but you know, other teams do it. So, you know,
it's been a problem. We've been saying this for a few years now, that we don't do enough of that. But what, you know, the annoying thing is, and again, and it seems like a cop out to go after the ref because it's, you know, you can't put it on him. But at the same time, I don't feel like he deserves us just not to say anything because the performance was just so bad. You know, the state and the obvious there, you've just mentioned the foul for the goal. I mean, their player stops playing because he knows he's fouled him. And then when the ref doesn't give anything, it's one of those like, oh, okay, I'll play on then. After he touched it with his hand and he knelt down. But this could have all been nipped in the bud, I feel. So when Jack Clark early on, and he had him on toast, didn't he, early on? I mean, some of the balls were getting pinged across to him and he was pulling them out of the air with a touch. And I thought, he's on it here, Jack Clark. And that little turn where he got away from him was so good. And he's just yanked him back. In no universe is that not a yellow card. And I feel like, Phil, the ref could have nipped all this in the bud. Because when he didn't give him a yellow card for that, it's just encouraged him to think, oh, well, we're getting away with this here. We'll be all right. We'll just keep, let's just go and kick them some more.
Yeah. I was at Rotherham on the Tuesday night, and I'm sure Mark Robbins will have watched that game and thought, this is how you get in amongst them, really. This is how you've got to make them uncomfortable, because man for man, technically, they will be a better team than we are. And these teams now will increasingly play to their strengths. And I think you can probably extend it back to the Millwall game as well. We got away with that one there, really, with a late goal. But Millwall played exactly the same way. Mm. Just tried to roughhouse you, really. And I think the more tired this team becomes, the easier they are to do that too. And they always have spells in games where this group of players is very, very talented for this level. So they always have spells of games where they will test opponents. And we saw that for the first 20 minutes at Coventry, most of the second half at Rotherham. For as badly as someone played at Rotherham, we still should have taken something from the game. And even at Coventry there, you know, every stat suggested that Sunderland had more of the ball, but that was just Coventry were just content to play that way. And once they got ahead, wasn't too many opportunities to get back in the game, was there? For all the possession we had, it's not like we were fluffing chance after chance, and it just frustrating, really.
I mean, you look at the what they had in some areas of the pitch, and you know, they've obviously got some really good individual players, and they're also very physically strong. And we saw that the first game of the season, and at the weekend. And you know, I think, you know, if you want to look at some positives out of it, I guess, you know, we were in the game to the end. You know, at 2-0, we managed to get a goal back, and you know, that's, you know, no matter how badly we've played at times this season, which has been rare, to be fair, we haven't had loads of bad performances. We're always seen to be in the game. And that was the case again on Saturday. Nice goal by Ahmad as well. So that's a, I guess that's a positive. But, and you know, if you want to save it, a more competent referee on another day might have helped us out a bit, and it would have been finished 1-1 if that, that first goal doesn't go in, or, you know, it could be different. But it's just a bit of a shame, isn't it? Because, you know, you were about 3 minutes from three wins in a week on Saturday. You drop those points, then you think you're going to a team that's fourth bottom, who you absolutely battered in the first time you played them this season, thinking, well, of the five-game run that we've got, this is probably the more easy fixture. Lose that game and then lose a frustrating one on the Saturday. So it's just a bit, you know, frustrating, because I think when it's going, I mean, I say when it's going well, it is going well and it has gone well over the course of the season, but when you get a little bad run, and our deficiencies are exposed over, you know, two games consistently, it does kind of, it's a bit of a reality check, isn't it?
I don't think there's many criticisms you can level at this team, but I do think naivety is one of them at times.
I mean, it's difficult when there's not a certain kind of profile of player in the side to help the young lads out absolutely. when this starts happening, though, isn't it? Because you know, I mentioned Clark then. Like I said, I really thought he was going to be on it. I thought the first 10 minutes he was just outstanding, and you know, when he got that drag, but like I say, the ref could have nipped this all in the bud by booking it. It's in what world is not a yellow card? He's turned him and he's pulled him back and he's stopped him from getting in the area. So it doesn't matter what minute of the game it is, what divisional level you're playing at, that's a yellow card and it's indefensible. Nobody can see otherwise. And when it kept happening, it seemed to just knock Clark's confidence, and that spread through the team. And I'm just concerned now that this is the thing that's going to start knocking the confidence out of these players, because letting them just turn up and have their own way. They've, like I said at the very start, and like Phil's just said there, this week there's been a blueprint set now, and
I mean, you'd hold the referee would be slightly more competent, but you never know. On a different day, you get a slightly less bad referee who would have dealt with some of the issues. I mean, the Ahmad one where he got a yellow card after he was fouled four times in the space of 10 seconds. And then he got a yellow card.
Amazing. Because at first, at full speed, you thought, did he kick out or something? But then you actually, when you see it back, he tried to pull his leg away because the guy was trying to grab all of it. Unbelievable. I would love to be a fly on the wall and see whether he's going to have to explain his decisions or not. You know, I won't hold my breath, but I would love to be a fly on the wall and see if he did, and somebody showed them that first foul by Norton Cuffey and said, can you please just explain to me how that's not a yellow card? And then secondly, the Ahmad one, and say, can you please tell me what your reasoning for booking this player is, just to hear what he said. It's so annoying. And we generally avoid ref bashing, don't we? On again, I don't want to use it as an excuse, but I can't remember being that open mouthed by a ref's performance. I don't think, I'm not even exaggerating.
Yeah, well, it wasn't good, but you know, I think, you know, in terms of from our perspective, though, well, if the referee's going to start letting things go and he wants it to be a physical encounter, you know, why doesn't one of our players just go and smash somebody? Like, they were doing it us all game, so why don't we get something going? Why doesn't one of, you know, someone like Hume or something like that or whatever just go, all right, I'm gonna, when the ball runs loose and there's a 50-50, I'm gonna make sure it's mine and maybe make sure I leave a little bit on them.
Well, the look we had on Saturday, somebody would have been sent off.
Possibly, but it just felt as though we needed to spark something up and maybe get a bit, you know, get their players running over around the twist and have a little bit of a Barney and, like, you
well,
know.
Well, I'll tell you what,
people going.
There's an obvious player who comes to mind, isn't there, if you talk about that? Somebody who is fit in the team.
If he times the tackle properly, then yeah.
I was surprised, and I spoke about that in the previous show, that 09 didn't play in midfield on Saturday. And I don't want to be director of hindsight here, because I know that we did get asked the question in the group chat when the teams come out, and we were saying, come on, let's not speak in hindsight. Are people happy with the team? And the majority said yes. However, I didn't realise, and I don't know if Coventry have just adapted and played like this because it's us, and like Phil said, they watched the Rotherham game or whatever, or whether they just play like this generally. Because if they play like this generally and always is physical, then I would have suggested that Luke or Nine would be the person to play in the middle. And it's quite remarkable, really, that we're here requesting this for Luke or Nine to play in the middle, because it's not somewhere we've been very positive about his attributes and ability, to be fair. But it might be a simplistic solution, Phil, but it seems like an obvious one to me that I'm surprised it didn't happen in either game.
Well, those last two games haven't played into Michu's hands, have they? Those aren't the type of games that will play to his strengths. And when Dan Neil is his partner, a lot of time for Dan Neil, but he's not an enforcer. He's not going to break up play. His best stuff comes on the ball. And again, it probably just highlights how much they're going to miss Corey Evans between now and the end of the season. He's that steady Eddie. He's the experienced player in there. And I think sometimes he can guide the team a lot better than those two can. I still am encouraged by Michu and the direction he's going in. And he's a lot better than I thought he was around the sort of Christmas time. You know, he's had some excellent games in the past month, but those ones show him up where his game isn't quite too... I'm not saying it's up to Championship standard, because he's clearly a more technical player than that, but he just doesn't play to his strengths. And if opponents rough him up early, his influence on the game soon dwindles. And perhaps as well, the other thing I would say in his defence is that he's played an awful lot of football in 2-3 weeks, and you know, and that extends to most of the team, frankly. And ever since the Fulham away game in the FA Cup, the game has just come thick and fast, haven't they? And because it's such a young team, there's not many of them are used to playing this many games in such a short space of time. And yeah, perhaps an element of that as well, where they just run out of puff a little bit.
I mean, it is interesting that, because he was barely playing at all, and then suddenly, like you say, he just seems to be playing all the time and a lot now. Whether Mowbray thinks Eck was ready yet, because he would be another person who does have the profile to play in the midfield if sides are going to attempt that. You're not convinced early on.
I'm not saying I'm not convinced. He just looks a bit creaky to me. But you know, he doesn't look comfortable on the ball at times. But like, he's, you know, feels really harsh. Like, take any of them, like the kids who have been asked to do the job, you know, two games a week, without, you know, losing experienced players through the spine. And obviously we've got Ballard, who's young but experienced at the level, and Bart and you know, O9, who's experienced, but again, he hasn't played much Championship football. I mean, none of them have really, so it's a tough ask, I think, to have them performing to the level that they have been every week and expect that. And I think we kind of touched on that you know, a fair few times, that, you know, maybe we've been, you know, we haven't been, maybe we've not been fair to these players by not giving them the support that they need when they do need that break, and they do need the person alongside them who's gonna, you know, have a word or pick them up or whatever. And we're certainly missing that at the moment. I guess the counter argument, well, it's sink or swim, isn't it? So, you know, you learn quickly if you need to, and you've got the ability, and we have seen that, I think, in some of the individual performances from the players, so that's a positive thing. But I think when you look at the overall context of the season, and we're not, you know, you're not going to be immune to losing games when you've just been promoted. But just it's just a bit frustrating when you think, oh, that there was an opportunity there to do something this year, that nobody expected. And just because nobody expected it doesn't mean that we don't try it.
Yeah,
to do it when the opportunity presents itself, and we shouldn't fall back on. Oh well, we're already exceeded expectations. So
yeah,
you know, capitalize on it.
Yeah,
you know, we've been there before. Like, if you think about, you know, I always end up harping on about the past and these things, but if you think back to the late 90s, and you know, instead of strengthening the squad when we're in the, you know, we could have been top on New Year's Day, you know, had, I think it was Trevor Sinclair scored a late equaliser in that season, instead of signing players in January, I think we'd decide to build the extension on the stadium. So, do you know what I mean? It's, you look at those moments and you think, well, sometimes you got to adapt and capitalise on an opportunity that presents itself that you didn't expect.
Yeah. I want to talk about this more and the state of play. And there's a reason we didn't really get on to talking about Gelhard's performance and the centre forward thing, because this all ties into the bigger picture, doesn't it? And I want to speak, so the current state of play, and I want to speak about that afterwards. So we'll have a break. Before we do that, though, I caught up with James, who is involved and founder of an organisation called Space, which looks after men's mental health, really, in the Sunderland area, and encourages Sunderland fans who maybe just want to go and find a group to talk to and stuff. So I've had a chat with him about that, and they are doing a walk from Mariners Park to the Stadium of Light on Saturday. So I caught up with James earlier, and he told me all about it. So please have a listen to this.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, I am now chatting with James Files. And James is involved, or the creator of, I believe, a men mental health charity, which is based in Sunderland, and it's called Space North East. So I'm going to ask you about that, James. First of all, though, massive lads fan?
Yeah, massive lads fan. Sunderland fan since I was, as long as I can remember. Season ticket holder all my life, pretty much, and Brent Rock Park and all that. Seeing that, I was speaking to Nick Wands the day, and I was saying that the last game at Rock Park, I got my head stuck in the railings. I was 4-year-old, I get pulled out by a couple of stewards.
But can you remember it? Or did you
just speak? No, it's just my dad tells us. I just got a match with my dad. He's a massive lads fan as well. So
okay. Oh well, at least you made the ground, even if you can't remember, because a lot of people can't say the same stuff. I mean, it would have been the most surprised answer in the world if I asked if you were a Sunderland fan. He said no, considering you're sitting with a Sunderland top on. So it did feel like the safest question in the world, right? Do you want to give us a little bit of an overview on what the charity is and why you started it?
Yeah, of course. We're not actually a charity, so we're a community interest company.
Okay, you can blame the contact between us for saying that.
Yeah, Jack. Yeah, I've told them now, set them straight. So we're a community interest company. And basically, we're not for profit. So Space basically is a group where we have every Wednesday, we get lads to come down, talk to us through whatever troubles they're going through. So it's a similar model to Andy's Man Club, but basically what I wanted to do was focus on the Northeast. The Northeast is a pretty unique part of the world, I think. Grew up here all my life, and I know the issues quite unique as well. For I think a lot of the people, I think the history is different wherever you go as well. And the reason I started it was because I went through it myself. I had depression for about 10 years. I was suicidal for two of those. So that was the worst time of my life. And you know, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. And it was every day you wake up thinking, I don't want to be alive. How can I take my own life? And ultimately, I got to that point where one day I decided that that's what I was going to do. Thankfully, I didn't. Something told me not to. I felt like I probably had a bit more to give than just taking my own life at 26-year-old. That day I dragged myself to the doctors and I was told that there's quite a big waiting list for me to see anyone, which was a bit disheartening. So I thought, what can I do about that? Obviously, I was in the middle of it at that time, so I couldn't do anything. But obviously, that was the day space was born in my head. I thought, there's got to be a better way, because all I needed at the time was someone to talk to, and I felt alone and you felt like a burden on your family. I needed someone to talk to. So I thought, well, I need to do something about this when I can. Fast forward 5 years' time, and I did it. So set up Space. The name Space is literally because we want to give lads a space just to be able to open up and talk to each other. A lot of the stuff we just work through by just conversation, just lads meeting up and having a bit of crack on with each other. We're not therapists or counsellors. It's literally just we come in the room, talk to each other, have a cuppa, have a crack on, talk to the footy, have a laugh. And honestly, the difference is massive. Mm-hmm. The difference really is massive.
It's good. I know you're focusing on men as well, because it's men are a lot more likely statistically to not say anything about the way they feel and then go off and do something is going to harm people.
Exactly. I mean, it's 75% of suicides now, I think, they're a male. In our groups, we get these like gems of knowledge all the time from the lads who are talking. One of the lads said last week, because we're talking about the drinking culture that we've got, and we're talking about the difference between how men and women handle problems. And he said, women go out to talk about the problems, and men go out to avoid the problems. And that really struck a chord with me, is because I think when you go out as lads, you go out for a beer, at the match, whatever it is, you do it because you probably got some things going on and you don't want to think about it anymore. But I think women are different in the sense that they'll talk about it and we don't. So that's why the group's here. It's a space, it's a dedicated space for lads to come and know they can talk about it. And they don't have to worry about what anybody's going to say, because we're all here for the same thing, to help each other out.
Okay, well, we'll get on to how people can get involved just now. Do you want to tell us about your plans for getting together and doing something before the Stoke game of the weekend?
Yeah, of course. So basically, the idea came from, we're looking at starting a campaign. The campaign's called Walking to Get Blokes Talking. Basically, all it is this year we're going to organise quite a few walks, so lads can come along and just go for a walk. And if they want to, they can talk about stuff, but if not, it's quite cathartic just to get out with other lads. So we thought about how can we do something that's going to be special for someone. So we came up with this walk. It's a walk of solidarity. So what we want to do is get as many people as we can to join us from South Shields. So we're going to start at Mariners Park, First Cloud Arena. I've changed the name a few times. We're starting from South Shields FC Stadium, and we're going to walk to the Stadium Light before the Stoke game. So it's about 2 hours long. But basically, the point of the walk is to show any lads who go to the match, no matter who you support, that there's support here, there's help for you. Because I think a couple of weeks ago, you'll have probably seen on Facebook some fans had to pull someone down off the bridge after the match, the three lads, I think it was. You know, that you have to be in a pretty dark place to get to that point. So what we're trying to do is say, listen, we're here, we're going to help you. And the whole of the North East football community is all behind you. It's okay to be having a tough time. There's help available. You don't have to take that step to go over the bridge or whatever.
Okay, so where specifically and when do they need to turn up if they want to get involved on Saturday?
Yeah, so we're going to be leaving from Mariners Park, so the stadium on Shaftesbury Avenue. I'll be leaving there from 11:45. So I'll be there from 11-ish. Feel free to come between 11 and 11:45, but at 11:45 we'll be setting off. And we'll be walking down past the academy and then eventually down Newcastle Road to meet the Bobby Stockwell statue. I think we'll be arriving there for around about 1:15 to 2:30, depending on how long it takes. Pretty well, different speeds and whatnot. But yeah, so 11:00, 11:45 leave, people can join us.
Is it a specific meeting point or is it not big enough for that? And
no, it's on Shaftesbury Avenue where the stadium is. It's just sort of, it's the main road there.
Okay.
That's where we'll be mixed. I think it's pretty much the only place you can get through.
Okay. So if somebody doesn't or is unable to come along on Saturday but is interested in getting involved and just meeting up with other lads, chat about football or whatever, how would you suggest they get involved? What do they need to do?
Yeah, so basically what we can do, we have our support groups every Wednesday. So 7 o'clock with Bake the Light. We have a support group. You don't have to be depressed or anything like that. You can come along just for a bit crack on. So some of the lads who come just lonely and they don't really have much contact with people anymore because we're everyone, whatnot. So you can come and see us there every Wednesday at 7 o'clock if you need a hand. And it's just for come for a crack on, cup of tea. Just have a bit of a laugh as well, you know, make some mates and it's a bit of a community forming now.
Okay. Well, hopefully people have listened to this, and if they can, if it resonates with anybody, they'll hopefully get themselves along on Saturday or longer term to your meetups every week. So that's great. Keep us updated. Let us know how it goes, James. Finally, do you want to give us a score prediction for Saturday?
We'll do. I think it's going to be 2-1 Sunderland. Alex Nett gets sacked.
I think they won 2 and 3. No, so, you know, time of recording, we don't know how things are going to go Saturday. Yeah. But it could be a tasty one because of that element. That's for sure. Yes, okay, James. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Welcome back to the Wise Men Say podcast. Right. Okay. No midweek game to preview. I'm not sure we should spend too much time talking about Alex Neil or anything like that. We'll let Matt do that later in the week, because it's certainly an interesting one, isn't it?
To say I'm not looking forward to that game could be a massive understatement.
I think, you know, Tony Mowbray made a comment, didn't he, about Gelhardt's not ability, but his opinion on how he's doing, and he made a comment saying he got lost amongst 3 centre-halves. I'm pretty sure Alex Neil's still playing 3 centre-halves at Stoke. So that'll be interesting. We'll let Matt look at that in more detail. Now, one thing we can't be accused of is being revisionist when it comes to our opinion over this. And, you know, I would love nothing more now for Sunderland to go and win every single game from now until the end of the season, you know, smash the playoffs and all that with the team shape as it is, but we'll not be accused of being revisionist or speaking in hindsight because we've made our stance really clear on this from the start. When Sunderland lost Sims and Stewart in the first half of the season, Tony Mowbray toured the party line for quite a while, I feel. And then when we lost to Blackburn was the first time he kind of come out and said, you know what, I'm telling my players that if we had a centre-forward playing, we'd be doing better. And Phil, he hasn't lasted anywhere near that length of time this time round. And in fact, he's kind of gone in, I think. I feel he's gone in indirectly on those who were looking after transfers and basically, you know, saying categorically, if Ross Stewart played at the weekend, we'd have won. Whatever he's called, a Swedish lad up front, as we call him,
Jokeres
for Coventry, was playing for Sunderland, we'd have won the game. You can't argue with it, can you? How can you not think it's up black and white? It's so obvious.
Yeah, well, I think I said last time I was on with you that that if Ross Stewart played, if you could guarantee me Ross Stewart played every week until the end of the season, would be, I think I said top half, but I think top six. And if you'd have extended that back over the rest of the season. So if Ross Stewart plays all 46 games this season in a hypothetical world, I just think we'd be so much better off. And if there was a beauty about him getting injured when he did, I was adamant that it ensured that they wouldn't not strengthen. I think that weekend of the Fulham game, everyone's 2-3 days left of the window, everyone's thinking, well, Gelhardt in the door with Ross Stewart. If they can get another one, then everything's hunky-dory. When Ross Stewart gets injured, it was inexplicable to me that they would just go with Joe Gelhardt. It just, and I know the club said they tried, and I'm sure they did, and I'm sure they had other irons in the fire, and it wasn't just all on Ellis Sims, but it just feels pretty negligent to have not got another striker in.
He did acknowledge that they tried, but then he also said that we aren't the kind of club that somebody would want to come to sit on the bench, which was just the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard in my life, considering you know, it's insulting, I think, to suggest that players don't back themselves and that they wouldn't have come here thinking, well, I could get in that team. Why wouldn't they be able to? All it takes is for one or two strikers to go out of form. Gellar could really do some help at the minute. I feel for him a little bit because the amount of pressure now, because we've gone from no strikers to like one, to somebody who's clearly doesn't look like a number nine at the moment at this stage of his career, whether that develops later on, you know, you could make an argument for that.
We don't play with a number nine traditionally, do we, apparently?
Well, this is it, isn't it? Well, this is it. Laughable. This is it. And it's just beyond frustrating. And it's just telling now that Mowbray is coming out and saying it, isn't it? He's not.
The really annoying thing for me about January with this whole thing as well is, you know, when we had the injuries, like you say, they kind of went along, or we'll do our best with what we've got. And then it was felt like every game, like for that period where we had the bad run of form, every player who got interviewed after the game on whatever it was, Sky or the official club channel or whatever, just kept on talking about how difficult it is to play without a centre forward. And then when it gets to January, again, we're getting told that actually we don't really need one. And you just think, well, if you listen to the players, listen to the manager. And then it was, obviously, the party line came out a bit again from the manager and that, oh, well, you know, not as vehement as the first time round, but like you say, he's kind of broken rank a bit quicker this time with the comments. And I kind of mentioned, again, the thing is with this debate, it seems very difficult to have it because the argument tends to drift into, oh, well, we signed these crap strikers, or what do you want us to do? Sign a crap striker. Then if you suggest a striker...
I'm going to head off the wall with this argument. It's just ridiculous.
So I said, well, look, Godden came off the bench for them and he set up the second goal. Now, I'm not saying Godden's like a world beater or whatever, but if you look at his record in the Championship, which I did after the game, after somebody said, well, he's an average League One striker, he scored 22 in 66, I think it is, in Championship appearances in the last three seasons. That's not bad, is it?
Certainly, if you're just going to be like
And he wasn't playing every week. He played 26 games last season, scored 12 goals when I looked it up. So, I mean,
it's nearly one and two.
Yeah. So, I'm not saying he was the answer specifically. I'm just saying the idea that we can't sign a striker is ridiculous. The idea that we can't get one that fits within the model. Again, which I hate to use a terminology. I'm sure that Chris Weatherspoon will be probably start vomiting now I've said it. But it's true. That's the reason why, isn't it? It's because we couldn't get a player that fits the profile that we were looking for. It wasn't that we couldn't have signed a striker. And it's a very specific profile, and that it's a player of a certain age who costs a reasonably small fee, who's got talent, and potentially we could sell them for money if they are successful down the line. And then if they are not successful, then it's no hardship. We haven't wasted a load of money. And I've said this before, strikers are the most expensive commodity. So we've only signed one striker permanently, aside from Jermaine Defoe in 2 years, and that was Ross Stewart. So it seems as though the model doesn't take into account that we should be buying a centre forward because reading between the lines, it's not a financially sound decision to buy a centre forward because they will cost you probably more money than you make back on them. But that's my opinion. Someone might come out and say, well, you're wrong, but I don't know what you think, Phil.
I wonder if part of the defence for not signing a striker is, and I made this point after Rotherham, that this team never looks like it won't score.
Yeah.
And if you, I think you have to go all the way back to, I think it was the Cardiff game at home, which is way before the World Cup. That's the last time we failed to score. And I wonder if they look at the form of Diallo and Roberts and people like that and almost think it masks it. But that was just unsustainable. And you look at the games like Millwall, Rotherham and Coventry, and the team's just crying out for just an out ball, because you can try and play football whichever way you like in the Championship. you be as pretty as you want to be, but sooner or later you will get games like that where they will just bombard you, and at some point you need an outlet, and Gelhardt isn't that outlet, I'm afraid. He's I was really encouraged by him in the second half of Rotherham, because lots of nice little touches, expanded the play, got his goal, and you wondered if that was some sort of turning point for him. But I just think it's so much to ask for a lad of his age, yeah, and his inexperience to be playing every single week. It is just, it's almost unfair on him, frankly.
And what did Coventry do when they were under the cosh a bit, and we're like keeping the ball and we're playing around them? And yes, we're not cutting them open. And regardless of whether the focal points there, we were on top and we look by far the better team. What do they do? What does any footballer do at any level when you're under the cosh a bit? You look for the guy up front, don't you? Yeah. You hold on to that, mate, for me, please, while we just take a breather here, regain our shit. It's just basic. It's basic. It's a really good point, that, Phil. I think about maybe they've looked, because they do like the stats and the data, and maybe they are looking and saying, well, we're scoring every week, so we'll be fine. And we will be. But this links to what Gareth said, you know, in the first part there. I'm just worried it's going to be a missed opportunity, because yes, they're ahead of schedule. When might it open up for us like this again, in terms of you're looking at the teams around it, and we know we're all saying it, we're a centre forward away from being a really good team. I couldn't see us not getting in the playoffs, honestly. Like you say, if Stuart was playing or somebody of that calibre up front.
I mean, we didn't even have to sign someone of Stuart's calibre. I mean, I don't think that would be, you're not going to probably
get somebody that's
yeah, you're not going to get profile. You're not going to get a like for like for Stuart, because no. Like I know I've said before, like Broughton,
the Diaz, profile, yeah,
and then like Jokeres, you've put those three of the strikers I've seen this season are easily the head and shoulders above the other forwards in the division of their style. I've seen, obviously Burnley have scored a lot of goals, but they're playing a very different way, and it's funny because they're two sort of centre forwards. It's Jay Rodriguez and Ashley Barnes, who are very well, not definitely Barnes, more of a sort of a target man type player, and bringing in those sort of more tricky players, the wide players that they've got. So, you know, you look at it sometimes, and it doesn't have to be, you know, sometimes you got to go, well, yeah, we wanted this, but we didn't get this. So what's the alternative? Now, I'm going to make a couple of, not comparisons, but just for balance, because you know when people say, oh, well, we're signed like, well, Will Grigg or, and they list all these strikers who were crap for us or whatever when we signed them and didn't work. We look at two seasons where we got promoted and two players who nobody would have looked at all, but we signed them. One, Brian Deane. Now, I'm not saying we should have gotten someone like Brian Deane, who's like 38 year old, and he didn't score for us, but he had a massive impact on that team when he needed to.
He played well.
Look like when he, like Ipswich, had 2-2. You know, big result in that season. Remember him having a real impact on that game. And then you look at someone like Stern John, who we signed.
Yeah. I knew you were going to say him. Yeah.
You know, and nobody would have gone, oh, we should sign Stern John at the time, but we did, and he scored 4 or 5 goals, and he was a really important player for us. And we
Paul Stewart, if you want to go further back,
yeah, maybe Paul Stewart, yeah,
had a big impact on he really kicked us on once we signed him. He used to bring Craig Russell in,
yeah. So, you know, sometimes you don't have to sign, you know, it doesn't have to be someone who is good as. But sometimes you kind of go, well, what do we need? Somebody who's going to hold the ball up, somebody who's going to be a physical threat, somebody who can bring on if, you know, because at the moment Gelhardt can't last 90 minutes, so we have to make the change, and we're playing out 20 minutes of the game without a centre-forward again. And especially if you're chasing the game where you need to get back into it and you can't bring a striker on, you have to take a striker off. It doesn't look great. So there are probably people going like, oh, you're talking rubbish or whatever. That's fine. I just think I'm all for, you know, the approach that they take. But I just think sometimes you've got to be agile, you know, is a word that Speakman probably would use, but he doesn't apply. You know, you do have to be agile. sometimes you have to look at what you've got and go, well, the situation dictates, maybe we're going to have to. And I won't be told that they wouldn't do that. It's not doable when they want it to be doable, because we signed Jermaine Defoe last January and he was completely not in the in the ballpark in terms of what we're looking for now. So, you know, it'll remain a mystery, and many people kind of defend it, and many people say, you know,
and I totally get the argument when people say, no, you know, maybe we're not ready, you know, we're not ready for the prep. And yes, like, you know, if you, on the face of it, it does seem like that. But a couple of things on that, like, firstly, if this recruitment team are, you know, backing themselves as much as, you know, I don't sound half, I should say, like, you know, as much as good as they think they are, because they've been fantastic on the whole. So you think that would have been wrong to say that. But more than anything, the flip of that way, yes, they've done such a good job to identify some of these players. So why not back yourself at the higher level? You would sign the same kind of player, but they'll be better. There'll be more, you know, the quality of, if you've got this scouting database and everything like that, then the quality of player is going to be better the next division you go up. Like, it wouldn't be ideal, like, in terms of, like, having an oven-ready side for the Premier League. We're far from that. But Forest, for example, had to sign a new squad, and they've coped. Can you? Do you know what I mean? When you can smell an opportunity like this, sometimes, like, why not go for it? And it's hard to believe that they haven't held back a little bit, in my opinion.
I was waiting for Phil. I saw Phil. My career, I feel like I've
stood using the silence with that.
I would echo a lot of what you said, and it is frustrating, but I guess they've got it in their heads that this would be some sort of, I don't think they've said it publicly, have they? But they, after winning promotion, that I thought, give us 3 years to get up.
And we probably felt that
this
as well.
Year would all be, yeah, about consolidation, which mm-hmm. is already in the bag, and that's a lot of boxes ticked. And if there's a hope of mine for the rest of the season, and I can't believe we're only 12 games left, but I hope it just doesn't fizzle out. And I don't think it will, because this team doesn't go long without winning its next game. So I think this team will always be on the coattails of the top six. But there was certainly an opportunity there to crack it. And because below Sheffield United, Burnley and Middlesbrough, every team's as broadly inconsistent as we are. And therein lay the opportunity. And we've never struggled to score goals, never struggled to win games, but they just needed that little kick in January. And I mean, the ambition that they were looking at four different targets on deadline day said that the club needed another striker. So at the end of it, just to suddenly, it almost felt like a shrug of the shoulders to say, ah, well, we tried, never mind, on we go. We'll go with what we got. It just seemed a bit sort of timid. It didn't feel like a club.
And then the country's leaving it at that, though. You know, I wouldn't mind if they just said, oh, we had a go, sorry, it didn't happen. And he nearly did that. But then he still can't help throwing in the stuff to say, like, actually, we know more about football than you, and this side doesn't need another centre forward and other teams in the world. And that's the thing that really gets me.
I would temper any sort of message that it's going to be a missed opportunity, because I do think this squad will be better for next year. I know you're going to take Ahmad out of it. I don't think there's any chance he plays championship football next year. But if you take him out of it, the rest of this squad will be better for next year. I don't necessarily see us in any great danger of losing anyone. I know there's probably a few that are sort of pushing towards getting on the Premier League radar of clubs. But I think broadly this squad will be better for next year. And if they could get a striker then, or a fit striker every week, then you'd fancy them to push on again. But it will be frustrating come the end of the season, because I don't think we'll be top six. And to be fair, I've never thought that. I've always thought it'd be close, but there's always something missing, whether it's the sort of depth of the squad or the inexperience needed. I always saw six stronger teams, and I'd be delighted if I'm proved wrong, but that was always my sort of gut feeling. And perhaps like the last week's underlined, I suppose.
Do you think we'll get through the summer without losing?
I'm not so sure.
Clark, Neil, Patterson, Ballard,
Stewart still, like injury or not.
I think somebody might go, you know.
And let's be honest, I think Mowbray plays his part in this as well, doesn't he? Because he's at every opportunity, he's telling us that Patrick Roberts is a Premier League player, for example. Now, I don't want to sound cynical, but for me, if you're coming out and vocalising that as often as you are, there's an element of it that's saying, come in and give us 15 million quid for this player, please. And then we'll see how they react by how much they reinvest. I agree, Phil. I'm not so sure we won't lose players, especially someone like Patterson. They're talking about going up and linking up with the England squad potentially. I mean,
yeah. Well, I think a couple of names you mentioned, like Neil and Patterson. I think if you're a Premier League club, you'd maybe watch with interest next year. I'm not convinced you'd necessarily see them and think Premier League ready. And then perhaps with Roberts, you're thinking, well, he's had big moves in the past to a big club. I don't know. Does that almost like blot his copybook a little bit? Do people still need a little bit more convincing on him? And the same with Ballard again. He's not played a huge amount of football. Arsenal didn't see a player in him worth holding on to. I'm not suggesting for a second any of these players won't make it to the Premier League. I'm sure the vast majority of those I've just mentioned will, but I think maybe next year might be early. I don't know.
I was thinking if I was a team like Burnley or Sheffield United getting promoted, I'd be going and thinking, well, I'm going to try and sign Dan Ballard.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, what did we pay for him? £1 million or something? I mean, in terms of a player that age with that experience and that ability, I'd be, because even if you come back down again, you know, you've got a player ready made for the championship with a level of experience. So someone like that, I'd be thinking, yeah, like, I mean, it's certainly worth a punt, someone like that. But I mean, we'll see what happens. I hope we get through the summer and we avoid losing our better players. And because I think that'll be the frustrating thing. We'll lose a couple and then we see where we were, and then it'll be like, oh, well, we thought we could improve on next season. Now we're going to have to replace these players who were really high performers last year, and hopefully we can. But it can be hard to do that.
What a difference a week makes in the tone of a podcast.
Yeah, I know. I know. Reactionary morons.
Yeah, but no, we're not over the strike. That's one thing, we're not over the strike situation. And
well, that's just how it feels, isn't it? It's how
nobody can accuse us of that. But at the same time, people want us to come and moan about that when we've just won a game. We will get slated for two of them. So we, do you know what I mean? You can't win sometimes. But I just wonder what input Mowbray is going to have, if anything, because he's, again, something, you know, talking about the absence of Corey Evans and the impact that's clearly made on the side, and we're a bit of a soft touch in the middle. And he said as well, I remember earlier in the season, he was quoted as saying, you know, I don't have really a say in the transfers now. That's not my job. I'm the coach. However, if they listen to me, I think we could do with another Corey Evans type in the middle of the park. And that's been completely ignored. So
I'm not bringing it up because he's coming back this weekend, but I don't think Alex Neil would have taken the recruitment strategy of the club in the last window.
That's probably why he left. I think when we've had time to reflect, you know, obviously we said a lot about, and you know, maybe the contract length had something to do with it, but I think with half a year, half a season, or three quarters of a season to reflect on things, it's probably pretty clear that that's the reason. That's the main reason he left.
Yeah, and I don't think, and in the end, it was almost amicable, because I don't think his long term ambitions aligned with the clubs.
Which is not us suggesting that's the right, you know. I think we're all in agreement now that actually did this. You know, we've tried giving managers full control before, and it hasn't worked. And then when they leave, it becomes expensive and messy for another manager to do the same. I think we're all happy with the recruitment structure, aren't we? At the minute, I don't think anybody's suggesting otherwise. And I think what you can say is that, again, with reflection and a bit of hindsight, the club have made, they would back themselves and say, we've probably made the right decision, and Tony Mowbray is a better fit for this squad of players that we have, and he's done an absolutely fantastic job, Tony Mowbray, in the hall. But I think, like we keep saying, just a few tweaks wouldn't go amiss. Just a little exception to the rule here and there when it comes to just adding maybe one or two players who've just have a bit of a different profile and have that experience is all I would say, really. Right.
Yeah. Sorry.
Anybody else?
Sorry for going on about strikers again.
Yeah, we are. Anybody else have anything to add before we go?
Buy tickets for the show at the Customs House on the 27th of April. If you go to 1973 Journey to Glory featuring Vic Hallam at the Customs House in South Shields, tickets are available online. If you go to customshouse.co.uk or if you go to wisemansay.co.uk, you'll be able to find the link through there, the £12.50 each.
Do that. Matt will be back to discuss the game at the weekend. Talk about Alex Neil a little bit, I guess, if that's your thing. As always, thanks for listening.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.